or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I was walking my doggy Einstein around Lake Temescal, and I noticed something new. It was a brand spanking new food cart selling the usual unhealthy crap, hot dogs and Doritos and the like. And I approached the person, because as those of you who are regular listeners to this show know, I frequently tout such businesses. I said, "How'd you first hear about it?" Kind of secretly hoping she would say, "Oh, I heard about it from you." She said, "No." She said, "We couldn't find a job. So we didn't have a lot of money. And so we just, you know, I went to cooking school and they, back in New York, and the person said, yeah, that one of the smarter ways to run a business, low cost food business, is out of a cart. So here we are." So that is emblematic of the times. You know, there are a lot of people who are not entrepreneurs by nature, who are forced, because they can't find a decent paying job, to start their own business. And you've heard me talk a fair amount about such small businesses before, so I want to avoid redundancy. So I was delighted recently to get a copy of a book that presents different ideas about how to start a low-risk business that doesn't require a born entrepreneur. And actually, the book has become a bestseller, current bestseller. It's called The $100 Startup, Reinvent the Way You... I hate these subtitles. They're typey, so I'm not aiming to say it. $100 Startup. You get the basic point. Basically, low cost and therefore higher likely to succeed businesses. And what I did, I actually read it cover to cover and highlighted a number of little nuggets that I think are things that I have not said before on this show about starting a small business. And so I'm going to share some of those with you, in addition to my comments about them. And then, for completeness, I will share some of my own thoughts that I think are most potent in terms of maximizing your chances of succeeding in a low-cost business. Okay, first, little tip. He talks about, I'll read this, the handyman who does odd jobs and repairs used to put up flyers at the grocery store. Now he advertises through Google to people searching for kitchen cabinet installation in their city. Yes, Google AdWords, I don't want you to, you know, advertising generally is not cost effective, but Google AdWords is so targeted that it may indeed be that your little local, ultra-local business, especially if you put the really micro-local area that you're focusing on, let's say you're really interested in doing basement remodeling, or I guess out here we don't have basements so much, but converting, let's call it space finders. This is one I like, actually. Whether it be your garage or your basement or your attic or the spare room, and converting it, maybe it's stuffed full of junk and you want to, you offer a service where you'll do everything from clean it all out and haul it away to installing shelves to maybe even installing a bathroom. But let's say your niche, your little micro area is, let's just argument's sake, the Montclair and Rockridge areas of Oakland. Yes, it still may be appropriate to put flyers around in the supermarkets, or even on busy street corners in high-end areas that can afford to hire such a thing. But you also might want to supplement that with a little bit of Google AdWords. You're only paying per click. And so by putting, you know, you'd search and find a term that's used frequently by searchers. Google allows you to do that. And so, for example, maybe there is a, garage, maybe the term is garage refinishing or garage remodeling, and then you add the word Rockridge. That's a pretty cost-effective way, maybe, for advertising your business. So that's one tip from this book, The $100 Startup. Next tip. This is a story. Jen Adrian and Omar Nouri began selling custom-made maps out of an apartment in Columbus. Now, I want to start with that concept. We are living in the world of what was originally called the long tail, more recently by Seth Godin called tribes, where you don't necessarily, especially as a small business person, you don't make a lot of money by going national, doing the typical MBA approach, you know, getting a business that can be scalable and is high tech, etc. You do it by going after a very small percentage of the market. So, for example, you're never going to compete with that couple, Jen Adrian and Omar Nouri. You're never going to compete with Rand McNally. But Rand McNally would find small little custom maps too much of a pain in the butt for them, but not for Jen and Omar. So, for example, in Columbus, Ohio, let's say we're talking, I'm just making this up out of the top of my head. Beta Breakers. Okay. Let's say you decided that you're going to create a customized map for the people who sponsor Beta Breakers and include all the local cafes and cold drink places and bicycle shops and food shops and whatever, clothing shops on the route. Now, that's a customized map that is indeed worth dollars to the persons who are sponsoring the Beta Breakers. You go and you create custom maps for them. Can you see how that kind of business might be a long tail business, a tribes business for a subset of the world, a small subset? So anyway, I'll continue with what they. I don't think I need to do that. Let me go on to another thing in this book, the $100 startup, little tips. Okay, this is a very important point. This was actually is a quote from Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert. He wrote, "I succeeded as a cartoonist with negligible art talent, some basic writing skills, an ordinary sense of humor, and a bit of experience in the business world. The Dilbert comic is a combination of all four skills. The world has plenty better artists, smarter writers, funnier humorists, and more experienced business people. The rare part is that each of those modest skills is collected in one person. That's how value is created. That's a great example. Not only that should be inspiring and provide hope to all of you who are not a genius at any one thing, but that you're pretty good at a lot of things. That can often be the key to success. I know, yes, there are some leaders. I have a lot of my clients, or a lot of them are like heads of nonprofits and heads of corporations. Yes, there's a small percentage of them that are true geniuses, and they're all very hardworking. But most of them got to the top by being good at a lot of things. And I always do like to talk about my wife because she's a perfect example. She's at the top. She is not only the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, not only did she win Superintendent of the Year for her region a couple of years ago, she's on the state superintendent's cabinet. She is good at a lot of things, but if she waited until something she was absolutely extraordinary, she's very bright, but is she the greatest genius? No. Is she attractive? Yes. Is she the most beautiful woman? No. Does she know a fair amount about budgets and how to deal with it? Yes. Does she know a lot about it? No. Is she good on the media and good in public speaking? Is she the greatest? Well, actually, she's pretty close to the greatest. She's really excellent. But she could always find somebody who's better. But by recognizing that she is good at a number of things that are key to success, she's been able to rise to great heights. And so you, whether you're thinking about starting a business or aspiring to leadership, you don't need to be the greatest at any one thing. Look at the two or three or four things that you are pretty darn good at, and that can help you perhaps find legitimate hope that you can rise from among the masses. In any case, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. The topic today is what I call shoestring businesses, low-string businesses that many people feel forced to start because of this unprecedentedly difficult economy. They said there's 8 million jobs have been lost in this past 4 years, And so I'm trying to help you, but not necessarily by talking about my own ideas for a change, but I wanted to share the ideas that are in $100 Startup. However, rather than lecturing at you anymore, I welcome your calling in. So if you are either thinking about starting a business or have started a business but have a question, either if you're in the thinking stage, what might you do, what might be the baby steps to get there, maybe you have the idea already but you're not quite sure how to go from an idea to successful implementation, or you're already implementing and you're either successful but want to take it to the next level or not that successful and you're looking for me to become your kind of turnaround guide, those are all good reasons to call here at Work with Marty Nemco. The price is certainly right, zero. So the phone number here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. The next tip from the book, The $100 Startup, that I wanted to share with you is a story of a guy named Brandon Pierce. He was a piano teacher, and he was struggling to keep up with the administrative side of his work. He liked programming, and so he created a little piece of software to help track his students and the scheduling and the payments and all that stuff. And he said, quote, "I did the whole project with no intention of making it into a business. But then other teachers started showing interest, and I thought maybe I could make a few extra bucks with it. The few extra bucks turned into a full-time income and more, with current income in excess of $30,000 a month." I'll just go on to the next tip from this book. This is the story of Kyle Hepp. Kyle Hepp is a wedding photographer who travels the world from her home base in Santiago, Chile. And her clients tend to be young and hip. And they like her work because she decided to pick a very non-traditional niche. She says, "We don't do any traditional wedding shots. We're not into old school." She spends all the time at the wedding getting fun, candid shots that she thinks the couple will like. So you don't, one of the, maybe the message in there is you don't need to reinvent something. You don't need to be an innovator. Just a little tweak that's consistent with the times. Young people, understandably and correctly, don't like the boring convention. Think about how staid traditional wedding poses are. They're the opposite of what a wedding should be about. It's about joy, about spontaneity, not about forced poses. So take an existing idea or even your existing business. Instead of changing it 180 degrees, give it a 30-degree tweak. And very often that can be the key to your differentiating yourself from the zillions of other wedding photographers and zillions of others in almost any field. In a country of 300 million people, especially in a densely populated area like the Bay Area, there are already zillions of people doing whatever it is that you do. So, you know, the key is to not try to necessarily, you got to differentiate yourself from the crowds, but you don't necessarily need to go 180 degrees different. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you are either in a self-employment situation or would like to be one and could use some guidance, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for what I call a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, Marty. This is George from the Mission.
Hi, George.
Hey, I was calling because you said that you could do some, you know, like some help for starting a self business, you know, self employed business.
Do what I can.
And my idea and the whole thing I'm working towards is actually I have the license and everything. It's just now a matter of selling to the businesses in Silicon Valley. Is that they already have a car service down there where they wash cars for like $300, but like the money's only going to like two different people.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, pay the men who work there, like tradesmen, like $50 an hour in Redwood City, you know what I mean? And let that money start scooting out into the places, you know what I mean? With like people who could turn that $50 into like $250 because his wife's going to open up a little taco thing or whatever.
Let me tell you how I would run that kind of a business. I would go to all of the dealerships that are, all the car dealerships with the following offer.
Oh, no, this isn't car dealerships, sir. This is.
I know, but you said you were doing a car service where you were doing cleaning and washing, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it's at Apple.
I understand, But I'm
I'm
here to add some value. So I'm telling you what I think my intuition tells me is going to result in more money and ethically done. Okay. I would go to the car dealerships, especially luxury car dealerships, the Lexuses and the Mercedes types, and I would say I'd like to do something for you and also will benefit me that will make your customers happy without it costing you a dime. Any customer who buys a new car from you will get a coupon good for a free detailing or, you know, exterior wash, interior detailing, etc. And then an additional coupon good for 50% off of their second one. That enables you to have every car dealer essentially marketing your business for you. And it is because it is a fairly low-cost business to do a detailing or a washing of a car on-site, by the way, because these luxury cars, you would be mobile. You would come to them, to the owner's home. But then after you've got them hooked, it's like what I call the drug dealer scam. You get them hooked by giving them the first dose for free, the second dose cheap, and now they're hooked. And because the buyers of luxury cars, unlike me, the pig who keeps haven't washed my car in years, luxury owners tend to like that, give a crap about image. And so they're the types who want to have their cars washed and detailed every month or so. Now you've got a customer who's got discretionary income. And in terms of 20, to, you know, you're talking about the workers and et cetera, take your profits and then use the Bill Gates model. You can give as much as you could give 100% of the money away if you want to the poor and homeless of the mission or part of it or whatever. But at least you've got a business that, in my judgment, has the potential to thrive long term. Make sense?
Well, I was thinking also doing it as a 401(c), the old we're teaching people model, so it's all tax-free end-to-end.
I think,
you know what I mean?
Well, I think that runs in a whole lot of other problems that you couldn't. It's very difficult as an individual, get licensed, like have a 40, to have what is it called? It's not a 501c3. Yeah. I wouldn't go that route first. You know, start by creating a simple business. If, you know, indeed, after, you know, you are hiring people to do these detailings, etc., and you're seeing it as a model, not just for giving them a low level job as a car detailer, which, by the way, you will not be able to afford. Let me finish. Before you won't be able to afford to pay them $50 an hour. But if you see that as a launch pad to help them have more empowered work, then maybe you could have the basis for going to a nonprofit and say, look at this wonderful thing we're doing. We want to empower more people from the mission to have self-sustaining jobs. Then you might have a shot. But I think then you're starting to compete with the Obama administration's job creation programs. I think create a small business like this, the way I've described. Take whatever share of the profits you feel you want and redistribute it to others. Maybe on the side, you can always have a volunteer effort where you are taking or the people who are working for you who are detailing those cars and perhaps help train them to eventually run their own small business. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, if you would like some help with your self-employment idea, whether it is an existing one or merely the twinkle in your eye, maybe a fear-filled twinkle in your eye, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, I'm telling you offering some tips about low-risk startups from the book $100 Startup. This one is this little story of Brooke Snow. She is an artist and a musician, like so many people who listen to KALW, is struggling to make a living. And she tried to do it by teaching art and teaching music in her Utah town. And she got by without working a real job, and she actually paid for college without going into debt, which certainly was a success. But she has been struggling like heck to make ends meet. Well, one day, she decided that she was, instead of putting up flyers for her teaching, she would place ads. Let's see exactly. I'm going to fast forward here to what she actually did. Right. She describes herself as a good photographer and teacher, but not technical. But she's good at bartering. So she offered private lessons in exchange for setting up other people's work. And so she now teaches, Let me see if I got it right here. She's doing bartering. That's what she does. Instead of requiring cash, she's setting up her business, doing teaching based on bartering. Because a lot of people who want art and music instructions, they're not, especially adults, are not exactly loaded. And they know there isn't going to be necessarily a lot of money in an art or music career. But those people who are artists and musicians often have a lot of time on their hands. And so her tweak of the standard job of teaching music lessons or photography lessons or whatever is to get paid by barter. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yeah, I have a friend who's interested in starting a dog walking business. He's taken some sort of a certification class that they offer for best practices. And aside from putting up a Craigslist ad, do you have any suggestions for attracting clients?
Yeah, to me, that's an overcrowded market. That's to me what I call a cigar store example. You know, cigar stores were hot in the early 80s, and so somebody opening a cigar store in 89, you could have the greatest marketing plan in the world. The field is overcrowded. Dog walking's been around now for almost two decades in its accelerative mode, and so I worry. I mean, he could be dancing naked in front with dogs on the, you know, on Montgomery Street, and I'm not confident he'll make enough money to make a living.
But
let me finish. Oh, no, you want to ask something? Please go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, doggies, how can you compare them to smelly old cigars?
Well,
they'll never go out of style.
What I'm saying is, though, that it's an old business. It's been around a long time, so it's saturated. There's a million. When I looked for a pet sitter, and I Googled pet sitters in Oakland, I got, like, dozens in 2 minutes. So, you know, there are some obvious things that I will tell you to do, but I cannot be sanguine about this particular career. I would certainly go to all of the veterinary offices in the wealthy areas. Those are the only people who can afford to hire such people. And they're usually working, you know, long hours, and so they need somebody to care. So I'd put a very seductive flyer and he's a guy. People tend to trust women much more, whether it be with children or pets. So he's got a little disadvantage there in addition. So I think what he's going to have to do is, in every vet's office, he's got to put up a cute little flyer with a great photo of him adoringly with a puppy, but also a clever name, perhaps. You know, Not Rough. Not Rough, you know, dog walking or something like that, you know. Also, probably in the high-end pet stores, perhaps he might do he might join up with another pet provider, for example, maybe a dog training service that's very popular, and he might do, I'll share my mailing list with you if you share yours with me, or a joint presentation. Maybe the two of them will do a presentation at the local ASPCA on the proper techniques for dog walking and training. Maybe he would do it also at dog shows, you know. But you sense the neutrality in my voice or the slight cynicism. I just feel it's a crowded market, very crowded market, and it's not high profit margin enough. You know, even if you're walking, you're being pulled by seven dogs at one time, you can't make that much money per dog, especially in such a mature market where market is very crowded, there's tremendous price sensitivity. So in order to survive, all the dog workers are lowering their prices. So I'm wondering whether he needs to wag his tail in a different direction. Anyway, that's my best idea.
Can I run one more crazy idea by you?
Certainly.
You know all these, when people, it doesn't take much to get over the point, whatever it is, 08 California limit for drinking.
Right.
What I've always wondered, especially with these celebrities getting arrested who obviously have money to pay drivers, what if, I'm surprised there's no service for when you've had too much to imbibe, probably more than you planned to when you drove out. A person you could call, or a service that would come and take you and your car home, or at least take your car home. A lot of people get behind the wheel and simply because they're at the car, they've got the car with them, they don't know what else to do, and so there's no convenient way to get the car home. What do you think of a service that you could call 24 hours and you know, the person, the business person would run out there and take their car home and maybe the person too.
Question. How would the person, if I'm driving, if I'm running that service and I'm going out to somebody's, you know, house, suburban house party, and now I've got my car there, I got his car gear, I drive him home, how am I going to get back to pick up my car?
I heard of a person doing this with a folding bicycle in a limited geographic area. So he'd drive out, fold up the bicycle, put it in the trunk, and take them home.
Could be. My gut tells me that some of the ideas that I'm sharing with you today, you might invite your friend to listen to the recording of this show. I've got a lot more practical ideas, I like to think, so I think I'll stop there.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Let me do that here. Let me show another example of what is, I think, a smarter kind of business idea. It doesn't make sense that it's worth the time and money to, you know, even if it's a bicycle, drive, you know, the person who's calling you to is probably not a two minute bike ride away. They could, you know, if they're rich enough, they're probably up in the hills and you're riding this folding bike up into the hills for, you know, 30 minutes or an hour. And the guy is impatient waiting for you. And then you're driving him home in the car. And then you got to drive your folding bike back to your house. It's hard to see that there is a lot of profit in there. And it's a good way to get exercise, I suppose. But let me give you perhaps a better example. And again, this is not, I'm trying to avoid giving ideas from me, at least for the first part of this show. These ideas are from the book, The $100 Startup. This is a story of a guy named Gary, who's what he calls a travel hacker. He earns hundreds of thousands of frequent flyer miles every year, and he's learned everything there is to know about the ins and outs of getting to maximize those miles. So what he does is, for $250 for up to two passengers, he will set up the trip of your dreams, he says, based on preferences you select. So the client will tell them, you know, where they want to go, which airlines their miles are coming from, and any restrictions they have on travel dates. Then Gary gets to work, and he combs these databases and sees availability, phones the airlines, takes advantage of every loophole. Well, for a lot of people, that's worth it, because they could be saving $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, you know, in travel costs, and they don't have the time or expertise or wherewithal to really figure out the smartest way to use those miles, especially if you're, you know, you've got lots and lots of miles. And apparently, this guy is doing this part-time. He made $75,000 a year. What's interesting about that is it's very specific. There's a lot of profit potential. It's something that is going to, because it's going to save the clients so much money, he can charge a decent amount of money. Unlike the previous caller who's talking about driving somebody who's drunk back from their party with the bike, that's, you know, like that $15 an hour kind of a gig. Whereas if you're saving the person thousands and thousands of dollars, you can charge $100 an hour, which is kind of what you need to earn as a self-employed person to expect to make a reasonable living without working 90 hours a week. All right. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, if you would like a 3-minute workover, especially if you are contemplating becoming self-employed or already are self-employed and could use some help, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now, back to the phones. It is your turn on the air. Hello. Are you there? No, you're not. Next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marty. This is Therese calling.
Hi, Therese.
I have a business idea that has that I've implemented and enjoying and having success with. That is an unusual model, and I also have a question for you. So, what I'm doing is called knowledge-based product promotion, and I'm working in the LED lighting field where a lot of manufacturers come from the electronics world, but they don't have any relationship with the architects and engineers and specifier world.
Mm-hmm.
So I put together a PowerPoint training, which is half educational on the technology. The other half is products across applications that are doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I get paid by the manufacturers that are in the talk. And I'm also an AIA, American Institute of Architects provider. So I give these trainings in about 8 architecture and engineering firms per month. And it's been great because the manufacturers benefit, the specifiers, the architects benefit. We generate leads for the manufacturers and local agents. So, but I'm limited to how much I can actually do in person. So I'm starting to get invitations from online LED magazines to do this training online. And I was wondering if you have any books to recommend or advice, because this is a whole new world for me.
Okay. First of all, a cautionary note. I worry that if you put your training online, it then becomes commodified, piratable or downloadable, and you therefore become less marketable. I'm wondering whether you ultimately would cannibalize your business too much by going online with it, unless you owned the rights to it and it was on a fee basis. You ran it more as a webinar, where a live webinar, where you did it online and people paid a fee for attending each one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, that's the model that's been presented. But does that mean that that whatever the server is that the PowerPoint is on, that I control that, or how do I negotiate that with the magazine editor and owners?
Right. You need to put it on your website or on there are webinar creation platforms. You put it on your platform. They can have a mirror of your page for the webinar right on their site or a link to your site. But you need to retain control of the getting of the money. You need to be the one who has a PayPal account where people want to sign up. They sign up on your website and your shopping cart. They pay through PayPal or whatever it is you want, and that goes into your account. That's the way I think you need to negotiate. And the side benefit of that, in addition, is that you end up acquiring a mailing list. Because if they do the registration on their site, they're getting those valuable names for a mailing list. Where if you keep the mailing list, then you can use it for your newsletters, upcoming more webinars, resell it to other vendors if it's ethical or appropriate. You need to retain control of that. Do not let them simply openly put your webinars on the market. Make sense?
It does.
Okay, and now with regard to the specifics, say you don't know anything about the doing of it. It seems to me, here are just a few basic principles of a webinar. The beauty of the webinar is that it's certainly, you follow the screenwriter's rule of show, don't tell. As many visuals as you can. People are very impatient on the net. If you're just a talking head, they're going to move. So I know you already, no doubt, have visuals from your PowerPoint that you mentioned, but try to view your webinar afresh and ask yourself, how could I make a higher percentage of my presentation visual? Mm-hmm. And so little video clips, et cetera. I don't want to turn you into a videographer, but I'm sure there's a ton of clips out there. Take as many clips as you can and use them. Maybe little demos, personal demos. They don't need to be slick. But showing maybe the room lighted with standard incandescent or even fluorescent lighting, and then show how much cleaner the light is with LEDs. Show, don't tell is the most important thing. Also, the value added, of course, that comes from a training is interactivity. And you want to make sure that you build in plenty of interactivity into your webinar. And that means not just waiting till the end and saying, do you have any questions? But every minute or two, people can call with some of the web conferencing software, whether it's WebEx or Skype or whatever. They can hear each other. GoToMeeting, they can hear each other's questions and comments. So really build in a lot of opportunity for questions and comments, so that not only are they interacting with you, but they can also get the input of the other attendees, so it simulates a live training more. Does that make sense?
And what I notice is that it's the interactivity that that brings the salient points into people's consciousness.
Exactly.
You know, if it's just me talking, I can ask at the end, oh, did you name 3 points about, you know, color temperature, and no one can remember anything.
Right.
But if I make it interactive and I say, you know, how does this relate to your world, and you need to know this to have a informed conversation with your customers, then that changes everything.
Precise. And why do you think I structure the show the way I do? There has to be some time for presenting new input, so I start the show you very often with 10 minutes of input, but then I quickly go to the phones and it becomes interactive. It's that balance that allows the presentation of new content from you, who is viewed as the expert, but then you are not the font of all wisdom, and then you go to your attendees and you get questions and comments from them. Make sense?
It does. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. If you would like some career help, especially related to this, is where the show today is focusing on shoestring businesses, small businesses, whether you're starting up or in a continuing mode but trying to improve your business or stay alive in your business, I can usually help with doing what I call a 3-minute workover. To call in for one of those, certainly the price is right, zero. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as like I said, I've been trying to share some tips, not just from me, but from the author of the book, The $100 Startup. His name is Chris Guillebeau, and it has actually become a bestseller, and with good reason, because there are so many people who can't find a job and are forced into self-employment, but don't want complicated self-employment. They want what I call a shoestring business. Here's another example from his book. He calls it the $120,000 ebook. There's this guy named Brett Kelly. He was a power user of Evernote, which is a public free note-keeping software. And he noticed that there was no detailed user manual for people to get the most out of that really cool program, Evernote. So he spent some few months carefully documenting every tip and trick he could find, compiling everything with screenshots and tutorials into one just big PDF file. He wrote, I obsessed over this thing, and I wanted to make sure I got everything exactly right. And right before the guide went on sale, he made a deal with his girlfriend. His girlfriend was threatening to leave him. And he says, I'll tell you what, if I sell at least 10,000 worth of copies, you stay with me. And lo and behold, it didn't just take a month, which was the deal. 11 days after Evernote Essentials, which was the name of it, went on sale, he got over $10,000 in his PayPal account. So that's the story. So the takeaway there is sometimes writing is key to, you can make a living, but too often there's so much content that's free on the net. It's very difficult to make your living as a writer. Again, one of the messages I'm sharing with you today is the long tail. Don't try to be mass market. If you try to serve everybody, too many people are trying to serve everybody. You're not gonna connect with that little narrow niche of people. But if you are an Evernote user, and there happens to not be a good manual, and then you've got this great thing called Evernote Essentials that you can spend for $20, you've got, you know, all these cool tips and tricks and screenshots. Mightn't you spend $20 going for the long tail, going for that little micro niche market? That often is key. Phone number again, if you would like some help on your small business, either the one that is in your mind and thinking about starting or scared to start, or you're already in it and would like to make it more successful, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Karen.
Hi, Karen.
And, well, I'm one of those people that it would be a miracle if you helped, because I've been like a pseudo-artist writer. Well, you know what I mean. That's right. Part-time thingy all my life.
Right.
I made any great money. But anyway, I have had a lot of ideas, you know.
You're
small, okay. Invention-type things. And so what I've done is, you know, I've gone to these inventor meetings and everything like this, you know, and I really never found any concrete help with them. And some of my ideas are small, and some are really, really big. Now, I know nothing about computers, nothing about how to put anything together. I can't even paste something. I don't know. But I do have an idea for it. And I don't know. People said, well, that is sort of not an idea because it's many things put together. Well, most inventions are, that's the key, many things.
What's your one idea? What's your idea?
Well, if I do that, it'll be like the intellectual property, which is the only thing I have, because I don't know how to do it. It's
no,
gone, right?
An idea has no, it is not protectable particularly. Anybody can steal it. In fact, most ideas never get stolen.
Yeah.
I've given away a million ideas. People tend to not steal. If you want my help, you got to tell me what the idea is.
Oh, dear. Okay. I'll take a leap, but it's a really big idea, and I think it's really good. Okay, it's a new format rather than a thing. Now, I know that there are a lot of programs on computers that do this, but this is a different idea. You have a small, nowadays you can make it even smaller. I had this idea back when computers were huge, you know, when everything was huge, like laptops and stuff. But anyway, now you can have it easily. It's two keyboards and two screens. Can you figure out what that would be for?
Well, I have two screens right now. I use it all the time. I love it.
I mean, these are back to back, keyboard on either side with a screen, and keyboard on the other side with a screen. It opens out into a little L-shaped kind of thing, a T-shaped kind of thing, really. And it's for one person being on one side and one person being on the other side, and what you type into one comes out on the other. And what it is it's for a translation device. And you can take it anywhere in the world and talk to anybody because your language comes out in their language and their language comes out in yours on your screen, and then you reply to it. Now, I think that is a fantastic, absolutely world-changing idea, which I've never been able to do anything with because people say da-da-da. And here I have given away my intellectual property on the air for nothing, but can you ever get anywhere with a thing like that? Because I think it would be incredibly valuable. I mean, there's ways you can do it separately, but a person takes that into a coffee shop in Baghdad or somewhere, you know, and they're able to talk to other people. If they get sick when they're on a trip, they can communicate with their doctor. I've actually heard of people that have been, you know, that have died on trips because they got their wrong medicine dosage or something like that.
Let me tell you my way of tweaking that idea. You don't need two screens. You don't need two keyboards particularly. Right now, what I would do is I would make that simply an iPhone app. There's instant translation software. It exists.
Yeah, I know that.
Right. All we're saying is you can have one device in which anybody with a smartphone, who you're talking with, and if you're talking with a doctor who's who's helping you or whatever, smartphones, especially in other countries where there isn't landline phones are not very good, are existent. So it seems to me rather than create a new device, which you take with you, but it's possible. There's a company called Franklin that for a million years has specialized in translation software. So what you might want to do is you can't just go to them with an idea because it's just not enough there. But if you want, there's two routes to go. One is you simply work with a program to create it as something that is a smartphone app, either on an Android or on an Apple, and then anybody who's got a smartphone can use it using the instant translation. Or if you wanted a standalone device, Franklin is and Casio both, I believe, are leaders in translation software. You can create a little device which has two, which is basically one, it's one device with two, with a keyboard on both sides, and if you want, so they can see each other. But what I think you need to do is, the key takeaway is, you need to add value first. You need to hook up with a programmer so you've got something, at least a prototype with some screenshots, then you've got some intellectual property that may have value. Does that make sense?
Well, frankly, not to me, because I know absolutely nothing about doing that, and all I've got is the idea.
You don't need to know anything about it. What you will want to do, I mean, if either through,
I don't really understand, in other words, what you're saying.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
Go contact the person at Franklin and say, this is my idea?
No. Let me slow down.
You got to keep in mind, I'm very non-committal here.
Okay.
You know?
So let's say, for example, let's imagine a device that looks about the size of an iPad. It's 5 inches by 5 inches. And it's mostly a screen. And you can talk into it. And just like, for example, in the iPhone, there's something called Siri, which is voice recognition software. So there is this device. Think about it as 5 inches by 5 inches and maybe an inch thick. And there is a screen on both sides of it if you want. Or it doesn't need a screen. It can be all auditory. What you do is, in your iPhone, you can, just like you can talk into your Siri, you talk in and you say, okay, I have a headache, and the pain is here, and the pain is there, and it instantly translates it, and through the speaker, it comes out in whatever language you want it to come out in. And so there is no need for, as you said, 2 keyboards and 2 screens. It's really just an application that would go on an iPhone or an Android smartphone. And because you only have the idea and don't have the expertise, you find, and whether it be through an ad on Dice or Craigslist or a friend of yours who knows a good software program, or look, you can even Google the term iPhone app development. They wouldn't have to develop the translation software.
No.
It already exists.
Yeah.
So what happens is you work with this programmer. I know all you have is the idea, but you work with the programmer to create a little prototype. It doesn't have to be fully functioned. It doesn't have to be ready to go. But once you have some kind of a prototype with some screenshots, some samples of what the interface would look like, you can then, now you've got some intellectual property that is protectable, and then you go and you take that to either, you either decide that the programmer and you are going to enter into a partnership and create this iPhone app, or if that's too complicated and too much for you, you then take the prototype and you go to a large shop that creates iPhone apps and or Android apps and have them do it, and you'll get paid a fee for the concept that has now been given enough specificity that it is worth it. It has dollar value. Does that make sense?
In a way.
That's my best. That's the best I could do. Anyway, I'm sorry I couldn't be of more help. That was as clear as I could make it. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. Let's I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you want some help with your small business, either a nascent idea or an existing business, the phone number here at Work with Marty and Emco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another tip on small, simple businesses from the book, The $100 Startup. You know, one of the oldest rules in the book is, not this book, but the oldest rules is the first thing you should always do, and it's amazing how many businesses don't, is you got to talk to the customer. And now, of course, it's a lot easier to do that than it used to be in the old days. Now you can use online tools like SurveyMonkey or Google Forms to do a little questionnaire or a little survey about your product. You can search on what kind of, you know, because Google search is such a powerful tool, especially for online businesses. See what kind of Google AdWords are being searched, what kind of terms are searched for on Google, so that can help you in your marketing. You must talk to your customers both in person and online. And there's another little bonus. When you do a survey of people about your product and they answer your survey, they feel a sense of commitment to you and your product. They will be more likely to act as evangelists for your product. So once you create the product, then they're more likely to go and be essentially marketers for you. Okay? Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Oh, hi, Marty. I think I'll do the webinar idea that you talked about. That's exactly what I needed to hear. Meanwhile, I have a very specialized cleaning service that I do that's for special health needs.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
right, I remember you. Yes, you've called
also
before.
Also been cleaning. Okay, so what happens is a lot of my customers, a lot of people find me somehow, and even though I don't advertise, and they say, can you clean for us, or do you know someone else who can?
Mm-hmm.
But and then they want me to, you know, instruct someone in their home in my method, because these customers have very high standards. They have very special health needs.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing is, I used to just spend my evenings just referring people and finding people and matching them up. And I could have, it was just very busy. And I had to stop doing that because I was too busy. Now,
sure.
Now, the thing is, I would, you know, screen workers for people and instruct them in their home how to serve.
Let me interrupt you. Why wouldn't you simply find one, or, you know, start simple, find one human being who you would like to make your trainee? She becomes your employee.
I've done that in the past, and what happens is in this field, if there's someone who's going to be a really good worker, they're moving on to other careers. And
let me share with you
if one little tiny thing goes wrong, I'm held responsible. So legally, it's really risky.
It's true. And that's why so many businesses are hiring independent contractors, and make that person an independent contractor. I have a very unconventional view about hiring to avoid people leaving you too quickly. I hire somebody who's got what is perceived by the public as a terrible flaw, somebody who's obese or ugly or older, or somebody who's, you know, who's got what is perceived as a big disadvantage, but it doesn't hurt me at all. And I hire that person, and that person is very likely to be loyal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also hire people who are not entrepreneurial, so that they're not going to go and become go off on their own. They love the idea of stability and a paycheck, treated fairly, treated with respect, some laughter, etc. And that, I think, may be the key to your surviving. Yes, hire them as independent contractors to avoid some liability issues, or see if there's a way. You know, you're not talking about a very high-risk business here. I think it may be your fears of litigation are overblown, because all you're talking about is very super green cleaning. You're not talking about using toxic chemicals. You're talking about using the opposite.
Well, it's not only that. I agree with everything you said. The thing is, a lot of people have allergies or asthma or chemical sensitivities.
I understand.
Okay, there was this one woman I worked with who is, you can describe exactly the way you described her. And she never wore fragrances, never.
Mm-hmm.
And the one day, she just came into the job with fragrances. And I wasn't there at the moment, but I never heard the end of it from the customer. Or someone, if just one little tiny thing goes wrong, and it just becomes a real huge...
You're too fear averse. In every business, there's going to be nightmares, failures, screw ups, etc. You must make your business decision based on what is probabilistically most likely to work. And from what I'm hearing is that you'd be wise to have your business where you hire one person, probably as a legal employee, not an independent contractor, because they are legally, the way you're describing it, is working under your direct supervision. Unless they meet, you know, there is a whole set of legal criteria for what constitutes an independent contractor. I'll leave that for another day. But find somebody, for your peace of mind, liability insurance. I don't think in a green cleaning business, your liability is great. If one of your workers walks in with a fragrance, this is the amount of the tort is not that great. There isn't that much liability. I wouldn't let that make you overwhelmed, spending all your nights and weekends pairing people up, etc. That's my best advice. I want to try to take one more call.
Good point. There's also Yelp.
Yep, indeed. Okay. Before I go to the phones, one more tip. You know, people get overwhelmed by a business plan. I have talked many times in this show about that a business plan for a small business can be much simpler than the intimidating tomes that are recommended in MBA programs. And this book, The $100 Startup, has a particularly nice version of it. So I'm just going to share it with you briefly, and then you can download it for free. I'll give you the website. He calls it the one-page business plan, and you simply answer each question in one or two short sentences. What will you sell? Who will you buy? Who will buy it? How will your business idea help people? What will you charge? How will you get paid? How else will you make money from this project? How will customers learn about your business? How can you encourage referrals? I'll stop there. Specific concern number one, proposed solution to concern number one. Specific concern number two, proposed solution number two. That's basically it. And a deadline. I will launch this project into the world no later than blank. It's a little bit more detailed than that, but not much. It's the one-page business plan. Just go to this website, and you can download or print a free copy of your own at 100startup.com. The number, 100startup.com. Let's go to the phones. I have time for one more quick call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a business idea. I've been teaching English at City College for about 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm specific talent in public speaking and pronunciation.
Mm.
So just, you know, looking at the way community college is going, I'm wondering how to connect with sort of the dot-com business and international workers mm-hmm. coming in who maybe need to make a presentation, but nobody can understand them.
Absolutely. Great idea. I've been touting this for a year.
English coach and like
it's called accent neutralization specialist. I've written about it in my book, Cool Careers for Dummies. It's a very good career. It requires no startup cost. It's only you. There's very high demand. There's tremendous need. You know who your nexus point is the HR departments or training departments at leading biotech and high-tech companies. That's a great idea. I love it that you had 20 years experience, accent neutralization specialist, and I want to show you a little sub-niche. People are talking always about Latinos, yes. But at the high end, and we all know, the Chinese and, and Indians, et cetera, but most people aren't realizing the absolute proliferation of Middle East Muslims who come in with their accents. So if you could do some reading and learning about helping people with Middle Eastern accents from Iran, particularly is the most frequent country from which they immigrate, but also Iraq, also Saudi Arabia, not so much Yemen or Kuwait or Djibouti, but if you do some reading about the accent neutralization techniques that are particularly helpful with people of Middle Eastern accents, that might make you uniquely qualified. But, of course, also there is a tremendous overrepresentation of Asians who, as you say, may be brilliant, but they're not. Their accents make them too incomprehensible, especially because they're dealing with such technical material. I think that is a fabulous niche. I love that I can end the show on a totally two thumbs up point of view. Anyway, I thank you very much for the call, because that's all the time we've got.
Thank you.
Okay. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. The book I've been quoting from and offering tips from is The $100 Startup. You can Google that. Definitely a good book, no question. I've also written about this widely, but I've tried this time because I feel like I've been over-presenting my own ideas, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't do that today. But I've written an article that synthesizes a lot of my views on the subject in an article called Shoestring Businesses. So just Google Shoestring Businesses and you'll find it. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers, workovers, whatever you want to call them. And I got into a cab and asked the cabbie, "How's your book coming?" He asked, "How did you know I was writing a book?" I didn't know. But most people are thinking about writing a book or are writing one or trying to sell one. So my guest this coming Sunday is going to be John Kremer. He's the author of the definitive book on the subject called 1001 Ways to Market Your Book. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.